Let's see what the stew has in store for us today.
Welcome to the Gnomecast, Gnome Stew's tabletop gaming advice podcast. Here we talk with the other gnomes about gaming things to avoid becoming part of the stew, so I guess we'd better be good. This episode is brought to you by our awesome Patreon backers like the Chosen Chuck, the Grandiose Greg Gordon, and the Admiral Amadeo Rosa. Today, we have myself, Ange, along with Tomas and Walt, and we are going to talk about introducing brand new players to role-playing games. Before we dive into that, though, we're going to ask our get-to-know-a-gnome question, which is, what's one thing you remember and sticks with you from the very first time you ever played a role-playing game? And since I know this is probably going back as far as history as we're going to go with this group, I'm going to go with Walt first.
I guess the biggest thing that sticks with me is the very first role-playing game I ever bought. And I mentioned this in the stew several times. I had no idea what I was getting when I bought it. And opening it up and seeing a 64-page rule book for the first time was extremely daunting, which is hilarious now because I think even the small role-playing games are 2 to 3 times that size. But yeah, there was a lot of leafing through and a lot of reading that my 9-year-old brain just couldn't grasp.
Which game was it?
It was the Dungeons & Dragons basic set, the Magenta Box, the Moldvay edition, which I think was 81. It was brand new at the time. I picked it up off of Kmart and... was it Kmart or Gregory's? One of the two stores that were around my house. But I thought it was the Dungeons & Dragons electronic game because that was what was on the commercials. That was the game where you had the plastic board and there was a treasure miniature in the center. And when you were going across the board, you would put down these little orange labyrinth pieces. And then a dragon would show up and you had to run with the treasure and get off the game before the dragon got you. That fascinated me as a 9-year-old, but when I opened up the game and saw it was 2 books, one being Keep, the other being Keep Under the Borderlands, I was completely surprised and had no idea what I was getting into.
Little did you know you'd be stuck for life.
Yeah.
What about you, Tomas? What do you remember about that very first time?
Well, it's weird for me because it's not like a good thing that I remember, but a bad one. My first coming into a role-playing game was when I was introduced by was once a friend that he came to me and showed me D&D 5 edition. The thing that stuck to me the most is how not to introduce one to an RPG because I didn't like role-playing games from that experience. It was much later when I went back into it that I ended up liking. And the thing that like I didn't enjoy from that experience the most was how he made sure that we carried out his story and there was pretty much no choice whatsoever. I tried to be like ingenious and think outside the box to solve some problems and they weren't the solution that he thought, so they weren't what it wasn't what we were able to do. Those kind of things just made me realize how I wanted to be a GM when I next was going to take the mantle.
What made you try again if that first time was unenjoyable?
Well, in fact, it was that a friend of mine came in and said, hey, there is this role-playing game called Dungeons & Dragons that appeared in Stranger Things. Do you want to try it out? And there was no GM there, no DM. So I just jumped into it and became the forever DM. And it was by playing on that specific spot that I understood how to properly introduce people to the role-playing space.
My very first time playing, I was given somebody else's character who wasn't there. This was first edition AD&D back in 1986. I was asked to play. I said, sure. We didn't have time for me to make my own character, so they just handed me this halfling rogue of a player who wasn't there. The thing I remember most that sticks with me is looking at this character sheet and seeing all these abilities that had percentages next to them.
Mm.
And one of them was climb walls. And I was like, we were in some room investigating something. And I'm like, can I do this? And the GM was like, yeah, sure. Go ahead and try it. And I rolled the percentile dice. I climbed the wall. And I don't know why I did that. I don't know what the purpose was of doing it, but it ended up being like something that has just stuck with me ever since.
Yeah, exactly. The freedom, that aspect that you can do whatever you want within the game is something that really stands out to new players, I think.
Getting to the meat of this episode, as you can hear, we're talking about people playing role-playing games for the very first time. So we wanted to talk about some of the ins and outs of introducing brand new players to role-playing games. And we all had to start somewhere. And as GMs, we have the potential to be the first GM someone ever plays with. So let's talk about how we treat newbies. We've kind of brushed against this with the Get to Know a Gnome question, but how did you find your way to role-playing games? Well, you mentioned that you bought the box because you thought it was going to be the electronic game, but how did you end up going from that to actually running or playing the game?
Well, I mean, obviously, you know, as a kid in the early 80s, what you bought was what you had. So we weren't taking it back to go find another one. So, but when I was reading through it, it looked really interesting. I didn't quite know what to do with it. My brother and I, you know, my brother was like, you know, a year and a half younger than me, worked it out as best we could, but it was really, a few weeks later, I went on an altar boy retreat. While I was there, a couple of kids there were playing D&D, and I was like, oh, I know this game. And so I sat down and watched them. They were older. They didn't want, you know, they didn't want this little, I might've been 10 by that point, but they went, you know, him playing, but I watched and I figured it out. And then I, you know, learned enough of it to play it. I couldn't figure everything out, so I was just making it up as I was going along. But then the kid who was bringing the newspaper to the house saw me, and he said, oh, you play that game? And so suddenly a group started to form. We started to play with more of the real rules and got into Advanced Dungeons & Dragons shortly thereafter. And from that point forward, you know, it was all systems go.
You got hooked.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I find interesting is that even those of us who may not have had an ideal experience with the first time getting introduced, some of us still get hooked.
It's interesting back then because computer games were in their infancy. You know, sitting around the table and seeing a bunch of people just using their imaginations was huge. And the idea that you could do anything. And back then, it was a very low barrier to entry because the games didn't usually have huge stories involved. They were basically a group of characters got together in the tavern. There was a dungeon over here. We're going in. Hey, you new kid, do you want to come come play? We'll roll you up something real fast. And they would just kind of hang in the back until they started to get their feet wet, and it was pretty easy to pick up. Yeah, the camaraderie around the table is usually what brought you back, you know, again and again. Some of the people I play with, I've played with since the 80s. Yeah, you know, different experience than today. I think it's a little more involved because now when I pitch to new players, it's, you know, do you like your favorite TV shows or movie franchise? Hey, you can play these characters in a story of your own. And, you know, that's what gets people in more than, you know, in the old days when it was just sit down and just start playing.
I think there's a lot more people today who have at least an idea of what role-playing games are, or at least know what Dungeons & Dragons is and want to try it. I've known a lot of folks who, within like the last 5 to 10 years, have wanted to try Dungeons & Dragons because they've already heard about it. It's not this weird, obscure thing that nobody's heard about like in the 80s. It's something you start to, you see more of it in media, and especially with some of the actual plays.
Yeah.
Like, you know, the influence of Critical Role of bringing new players to the hobby is pretty, pretty solid.
Yeah. Much of that has changed a lot in the recent years. Mostly the media has managed to show role-playing games in a different manner. Usually it was a nerdy thing with lots of math, and now they usually show people having fun together in a table. It's displayed in a different way that might catch people's attention as well.
It's still a nerdy thing with people doing math, but there's a little bit more of a cool factor
exactly.
to it than just the nerds playing a game together.
Mm-hmm.
Tomas, when you transitioned from your bad first experience with it, you told us a little bit about it, but what made you really want to still try and do it? Was it just the enthusiasm of the people around you that wanted to play?
There was a bit of many things. As you have said just before, the actual play space, especially the Critical Role, was what showed me what role-playing games could be like. While I did try and had a bad experience with it the first time, I saw Critical Role and Matt Colville as well, their videos, and they really showed me what the game could be and how to run it in a way that people instantly get hooked or create a cohesive story, which is what captivates me the most when running games. I want and like to create cool and interesting stories for my players.
How do you describe a role-playing game to someone who's never played before? Like, obviously, we were just saying a lot of people nowadays have at least heard about them, but how do you describe what it actually is to someone who's never played before?
That's a very difficult question. I have been asked that about that many times because I work in the DTRPG space. And when describing that, what I usually tend to lean more towards is, okay, imagine if you wanted to create your own movie or TV series from scratch, but you didn't have all the production, all that stuff. Tabletop role-playing games give you the necessary tools to be able to create your own story collaboratively with a group of players and friends that you can do pretty much whatever you want within the system that you decide to play in. It can be in any sort of genre. If you want to play a horror game, if you want to play something like Fast and Furious with a lot of action, something like Lord of the Rings, something like your favorite video game, the tabletop role-playing space gives you a room to create all those very interesting stories and not put you on a railroad on what you can and can't do. You can do whatever you want as long as your GM allows you.
What about you, Walt? How would you describe it to somebody who's never played before?
Yeah, in the old days? remember when you had your action figures and you couldn't tell who shot who? But no, usually my go-to, as I usually say, it's basically improvisational theater. And, you know, with somebody who's, you know, the game master or director who kind of, you know, helps things along, plays the antagonists and other characters and things, and that you basically, you take on a persona and you try to be that person getting through an adventure. Depending on who I'm talking to too, it, you know, you can usually tell, you know, if I'm pitching Star Wars, for example, I'll say, you know, do you want to be Luke or Leia or Anakin or Rey or
Chewbacca?
Yeah, you can play in this universe and there are other stories to tell, other adventures, and you know, but you guys, you know, you all get to decide how you're going to approach a problem, how you're going to solve it. If you get into trouble, there's rules that, you know, figure those things out. Usually the improvisational part of it is enough to hook them. I mean, at this point in, you know, 2024, a lot of people are used to playing games online that are kind of like that. And I say that, you know, yes, it's like that, but it's theater of the mind and there's literally no boundaries. You know, if you can think of something, there's no invisible wall that's not going to let you go over there, as long as the game master can keep things moving.
I'll usually throw in that it also can be cooperative storytelling.
Yes.
With the randomness of the dice.
Mm-hmm.
We're all sitting around at a table. Everyone is kind of controlling their character, and you're telling a story of what those characters are doing together. That sometimes can, you know, help frame it a little bit, at least for the types of games I like to play.
There's also one interesting aspect that I tend to use as well, depending on the person that I'm talking to, if I want to hook them. If I know the person well enough, I will try to describe it considering something that I know they like. For example, a grandma, when I was talking to her about that, she likes to read a lot of historical books. So I will say, okay, yeah, in these sort of games, you can recreate scenes from the past or take inspiration from mythology or certain historical events and put them into your game and recreate them in a different way.
Mm-hmm.
Depending on the kind of person that you're talking to, you can tailor how to sort of describe RPGs, as they are so big and so can change so much.
It's funny, just anecdotally, I was just talking about my daughter going to state college. When I met my wife, she was going to state college, Penn State, and we were driving home. And at that point, she had only played Dungeons & Dragons, which I guess back then was second edition. And she had done a little bit of the vampire LARPing, which is where we had met. We were in the car, she was driving, and I was leafing through my Call of Cthulhu book. And she just looked at me, she's like, what's that? And I go, oh, it's another role-playing game, but this one's like set in the 1920s, and your characters aren't heroes, you're just like, you're normal people, and, you know, the horrors come, and you have to deal with it. And she's like, why am I not playing that game? So we got home, and, you know, a Call of Cthulhu campaign started, but I think that's important too. You know, some people who might not get hooked on one type of game are really going to enjoy another type. You know, once you get to know them and know what, you know, what their likes and dislikes are. I've always loved, you know, historical games with a twist.
Yeah, I think that brings us into talking about how, you know, how do you approach bringing in a new player? You've got somebody who's a little bit interested. How do you actually approach bringing them in to play a game? What are the tactics you guys take to do that?
There's this video that has been appearing everywhere right now, so surely you have seen it before, about Deborah Ann Woll introducing Sean Bernthal, I think it was.
Tomas, you're stealing the thing I was going to mention at the end of the episode.
Oh, sorry.
Keep going, though.
Okay, yeah, I saw it everywhere, so I had to name it. The fact that you can just go ahead and jump straight into it without getting into the mechanics, just start describing a scene and asking the other person, what do you want to do? And it's as simple as that. And you keep improvising depending on their choices. You can have a die at hand to have them roll some stuff. In fact, when I did introduce my little sisters to the game, I created like 3 stats, for example, in order for them to know what they had to roll and what they had to add on top of it to better understand how a game of this sort is. And as they keep playing, you can put more rules into it so they can get ready for what a big role-playing game or crunchy might be.
Yeah, there are some really good game, game systems out there to introduce little kids, younger kids to role-playing. It's like No Thank You Evil, Hero Kids, I think is one of them.
Kids on Bikes, Kids on Capes, Kids on... there's all the Kids on Games, Kids on Brooms as well are pretty great because they are very rules light.
Yeah, it's funny. One of the first games I introduced my kids to was the old West End game Star Wars.
Oh, yeah.
Because obviously, the kids like Star Wars. Their opinions on the prequels are a little different than mine.
They're going to be a different generation.
but the nice, the great thing about that is that they have archetypes in the back of the book that pretty much, you want to play a bounty hunter? Here you go. You want to play a smuggler? Here you go. You want to play a young senatorial? Here you go. You want to play a minor Jedi? Here you go. And I always find that with new players, I do a very guided character creation with them where mm-hmm. I'll just sort of ask them what they want to play and then say, okay, well, then you need this, this, and this. Because, I've seen many a session killed dead by taking it all up with character creation and the person who was going to play thanks us for coming and then never shows up again.
Yeah.
Not just for new players too, but my general tack I use at conventions all the time if I'm running things is get everybody involved in the action right away. So that people are, they're playing, they're thinking, they're working together right away.
Yeah.
That's a lot better than a slow build, I find.
I did that with my niece and her friends a few years ago wanted to play D&D together and asked me if I would run for them. And I think my niece had played a little bit. I'd run a little bit for her and her sister. And one of her friends had played some, but the other two had never played at all. So it was very much a kind of go through the basics of the character to figure out who they wanted to play. And then almost immediately I threw them into a situation with, I think, a goblin or kobold fight, something to just, get them thinking about how this works, get them thinking about what their characters could do and get them into the action.
Definitely. Yeah. One thing that they really like doing as well is when I'm introducing players, not necessarily to a game or to RPGs in general, but whenever I'm starting any sort of new game or adventure or anything, create an immediate mm-hmm. rest situation to start with. Be it a chase, or maybe they are in the middle of a dance ball, or they are running from some thieves. Stuff like that usually gets them instantly hooked and they have to think on the spot, and that hooks them so fast, in my opinion.
I do think one of the important things to understand about introducing new players is sometimes they don't seem that invested.
Yeah.
You'll be running the game, especially if you're running with a mix of new players and experienced players. The new player will be really quiet, and you'll kind of have to regularly check in with them to find out what their character is doing. They're not going to be immediately doing the improv role playing or immediately coming up with the cool ideas and all that. They're very focused, but they don't seem as engaged. And then almost invariably when I've seen that happen, when the game is done, that new player is like, so when are we playing again?
You just gave me a horrifying flashback. One of the first convention games I ran, newly minted, it was Victoriana, believe it or not, way back in like 2010 maybe. I sat down with the group and this couple came in and they were both cosplaying some big anime thing. I don't remember what the characters were, but I mean, they had like body armor and all this stuff. And I'm like, this is great. So that we sit down and it was a couple. I gave them their characters. Obviously, it's a convention game. They don't have to make characters or anything. One of the movers and shakers of this particular campaign was like the sort of matriarch of the family they were playing. And that was what I gave, you know, I didn't give. I think she picked the one cosplayer. The beginning scene, she was supposed to be interacting with the family uncle or whatever, and I couldn't get her to speak at all. I'm trying to engage. She's just looking at me. She has no, you know, she's like, I'm getting a blank look. So I start in my brain mentally, you know, working around it and all. We get through the game. The only time she became animated was when there was a combat situation and there were dice to roll. And then she would get up, she would roll the dice and all. And when that game was over, I felt like I completely failed this person. And I was just like, oh, man. Following year, I sit down to play. She's there again. Following year after that, she's there again. 2 or 3 years in, she finally meets me over at the booth, and she just wanted to thank me. She said that that was the first time she'd ever played a role-playing game. I had no idea, but she completely loved the world, loved playing in the game, and she kept coming back for more and more. And she was, you know, those successive years, she was definitely much more active, but I didn't realize I was playing with a, you know, complete noob at that time.
I think it's important for GMs to understand that not every new player is going to be super interactive that first time you play, because there's a lot going on in their imagination, a lot going on as they're absorbing everything and watching how other people play. And it can be tough on the GM because you're like, oh my God, this player isn't interacting. I don't think they're having any fun. When we added a fifth player to my niece's game, it was one of her friends from high school. She came in, we made her a monk that was an elemental fire-based monk. And, you know, she's, you know, obviously taking it all in, obviously thinking very carefully about who this character is and all that. But role-playing was not on the table. I kind of had to guide her through some of the combat stuff. And literally on the way home, she was like, that was awesome. I can't wait until we play again. It's just something to keep in mind with new players.
Yeah, one additional thing that I found a lot, mostly with my player group, is that most of them came from a video game sort of space, and they had no interest in doing any sort of improvisational stuff or something like that. They didn't do theater either. They just saw D&D as some sort of way to play a video game, but there is no code in it, so they can do whatever they want. And it's okay to do that as well. It's just that they may not be very used to role-playing at first, and they may not end up being that much of a role-player either in the many years to come, but some of those with the coming years are going to open up more, especially if you as a GM decide to put the voices, like mimic a bit on how the NPCs are going to act, or put more elaborate descriptions on the actions that the enemies take. And they may end up copying the way that you do that and make just enjoy the game even more by being more immersed in it.
It can take a little while to feel comfortable doing the kind of improv role play that a lot of us really enjoy in games where it's we're getting really into character and interacting in the scene,
yeah,
and all that. It you got to have a degree of comfort with the hobby and probably the people at the table, or at least one or the other, to get comfortable doing that.
Yeah, every group has its own chemistry, alchemy, and how you play in one. I mean, even with myself, I play a couple of different games a week, and one game plays very differently than the other, even though we share a couple of players between them.
Yep.
There are some games where it's like, I want to talk to the Baron, I'm making a persuasion check or something, whereas another group would just talk to the Baron.
I had an incident at Origins. I didn't know the player was new for sure, but she came across as very inexperienced and had been very quiet throughout the whole game. And we're finally getting to it. I had to drag that whole group through the adventure because they just wouldn't, they weren't proactive about anything. And we finally get to this point. There's a guy they've been following who's kind of harassing a woman at the bar, you know, kind of annoyingly flirting with her. And the woman just hasn't had the opportunity to escape yet. And she's like, I'm going to go over and I'm going to flirt with him to give her a chance to get away. And I'm like, great. And she picks up her dice and I'm like, no. Tell me how you do this. Tell me what your approach to this. And she got this panicked look in her face and she said, just blurted out loud, you need to run. The cops are coming from you. And the entire table was like, that's not how you flirt. But it was like she finally did something, which was really exciting. Do either of you have a quote unquote best system that you like to run for new players?
I am not sure if one best system. I know that games that are light on rules, like for example Morkborg, are pretty great if they want to delve into the dungeon crawling aspect of those kinds of games.
Mm-hmm.
But if you want to create a story rich game, definitely try out things like the Kids on Bikes, Kids on Brooms, Kids on Capes sort of games. They're pretty cool, and there are plenty of rule light games as well. Dread, if they want to go into horror as well, because you only need to know how to play Jenga, and that's it.
I usually say that, I mean, for myself anyway, the best systems to introduce new players to are the ones you're comfortable running, because you can guide a new player very easily with any system. I mean, and I grew up in the, I cut my teeth in the 80s when we had some pretty archaic systems. Arcane. I mean, there were, rules for everything and they didn't fit together and all that stuff. But I mean, yeah, as long as you know what the basic mechanic is, you can roll with, you don't have to play with every bell and whistle with new players just, to get them interested. But as long as you know what you're doing, I find that new players tend to put a lot of trust in the game master.
Yeah.
My advice is pretty much the same as you, Walt. The only caveat I'll throw on it is that the genre of the game should be something the player is interested in.
Yeah.
A player who really doesn't care about Star Wars, it doesn't matter if Star Wars is the game you know inside and out, you probably want to try something else for that player.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, well, obviously that goes without saying, but there's not a system that I would necessarily steer new players away from as long as I'm comfortable with it.
Mm-hmm.
So like if we're playing Star Wars, actually I can play Star Wars in several different systems, take your pick. But they're looking for the experience. As long as you can give them the experience, and there has to be a, I think player, new players don't necessarily, grok the rules very quickly, but they do grok fairness.
Yes.
They can tell when you're being fair and you're, and I always tell them too, there's a rule for this, but we're not going to worry about that now. How does this sound? Just, give me a roll. If you get this, you do it. And they're happy with that. Uh-huh. As long as you're doing that with everybody, but if you're playing favorites or they don't feel like they're participating, then that can become a problem.
Yep.
There's also one more additional aspect that they wanted to point out, that some people come into these sort of games without being very experienced, for example, playing board games or video games, things that have very structured rules within them.
Mm-hmm.
Those that have played those kinds of things may be more be able to jump into something as crunchy as D&D or Pathfinder easier than those that have never done so.
There are a lot of very cool indie games that are, I don't want to say obscure, I think some of those more indie games, especially some of the GM-less ones, are better for more experienced players.
Yeah.
The one most people know, Fiasco. Fiasco is a GM-less game. It's fairly simple and straightforward, but if you don't have any experience at all with role-playing games, it can be a little weird to try and get comfortable in a game like that.
Mm-hmm.
I think some of the more, it doesn't have to be a trad game. It can be OSR, it can be an indie game, but I think the structure needs to be a little more like like a typical role-playing game, if that makes sense.
I do recommend that I try it out with new players to the hobby. Some weeks ago is Raccoon Sky Pirates. That's the game. It's a little sort of board game that is mixed in with role-playing elements.
Mm-hmm.
And you play as raccoons trying to go into a neighborhood and stealing things from humans to have them back in your junkyard. And you play as chaotic beings and you can do whatever you want. There's not much rules to it either, apart from one die that if you roll a raccoon side on the die, everything goes amok. But it's fairly simple and a great way to introduce new players.
Very cool. What about somebody who comes to you and has never played a role-playing game before and wants to try and run a game right away? Do you have any advice for them?
I mean, the frustrated novelist? Yeah. Yeah, that's actually a difficult one. I mean, that's kind of like saying, you know, can you coach a team without ever having played the sport? You know, it's a tough one to, I mean, you can, I mean, if you, I mean, we all have to some extent. I mean, you know, I don't think there's anybody here who's never played make-believe stuff when they were kids.
I think with this question, like, it kind of is a scenario that doesn't necessarily exist, because if somebody is in enough of a community to know to ask for help on how to run a game without ever having played one before, they probably have had an opportunity to play. Because I know if anybody came to me like that and they're a person I like, I'd offer to run a game for them so they could see what it's like first.
Yeah, I don't think I've ever had actually a person come to me who had never played before. I know that my daughter, my eldest daughter, when she started, you know, getting into it, she played, I started on Blue Rose. She played for about a year or two, and then she, believe it or not, her high school had a D&D club.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
She was playing there, and her friends wanted, she found Call of Cthulhu, which was a game that she had barely played, and she wanted to run. And so I had gotten her the introductory book that they, you know, had like five scenarios, but they basically really talk a game, you know, a keeper through it. Yeah. Basically, I told her, you know, have your friends over. Dad's going to be in this other room watching TV. If you need help, shout. but I helped her set up. I showed her, you know, I got her the character sheets and things, and, you know, this is what you do. I gave her some advice and some pointers on basically, you know, same sort of things you would do at conventions, right?
Yeah.
Give them characters. Don't waste time trying to generate them. That's another thing you can do later. Know your basic mechanic, know the general beats of your adventure and where you want them to ultimately get to. And if things go off, so that when things go off the rails, which they always will, you can sort of guide them back if you need to. Don't get caught up in minutiae. A big thing that, or a simple thing, I should say, but it's a big one. And for some reason, it was really hard for me to grok in 5e D&D, even though it was written in there, is basically if a player asks to do something, there's always three responses. Yes, no, and give me a roll. And there are a lot of times you don't need to go to give me a roll. Everybody has this idea that they have to roll for everything. And it's like,
No,
you can just say, yes, oh, your character's a mechanic. Of course they know how to put the tire on the car. No, your character doesn't know brain surgery, you know.
Yeah.
So put that yes and no, and just, you know, if the flow is going and the players are having fun, especially if there are no stakes at the moment and somebody wants to do something, just let them do it.
Yep.
Sometimes nothing kills a session dead like a bad dice roll at the wrong time.
Oh, yeah. That's one of the things that can kill a game is asking for too many dice rolls. That's probably a whole other topic. What are some things you need to keep in mind when you're running for new players?
Don't give them too many rules at first. That will intimidate them. Give them as little rules as you can, if possible. Maybe just a bunch of numbers, like I said just a bit before, to add on top of the things that they roll. Players will like rolling dice because across all generations that has been very fun to do. And just do some little math by adding a 3 on top of the result and stuff like that. And if they go over a number that you say, they can do it. Just have a genre of their liking and go ahead.
You know, it's simple, you know, try to get them comfortable, make sure that they succeed. Nothing makes new players, you know, hate a game that they can't seem to do anything, or they're constantly misrolling dice. And to not overcomplicate the game, if you have something that they can accomplish in that block of time that you have, that you can, you know, end the session with them feeling like they've accomplished something, that's always a good thing. I think those are probably the biggest things.
Yeah.
You know, just get them used to rolling the dice or doing whatever mechanics that they're having, but, you know, don't get them bogged down in minutiae. The other thing that I do too is I let them know, I know some game masters seem to have a problem with this for some weird reason, but I don't mind telling them, oops, I messed up. We've got to, you know, fix this. You know, let them know that I'm human too. It's okay to make mistakes, and we'll just fix them and move on, rather than try to pretend that there are no mistakes or whatever.
I think the last thing I would recommend is pay attention to the table as a whole, because nothing can ruin a new player's experience like another player at the table constantly telling them what to do or trying to take over running their character for them because they're obviously new. Conversely, a player who is really good at helping and guiding new players can be a godsend to have at the table when you've got new people in. Just pay attention to the dynamics that are happening at the table between all of the players. If you've got all new players, it'll probably be about the same level. But if you've got a mix, keep an eye on that. Because I have been in games where the GM is so caught up in running the game, they miss that there's somebody who's kind of dominating a newer or inexperienced player in trying to tell them how to play their character, which can be a whole lot of not fun.
That sucks.
I would also build on that by saying that it helps if you can give that new player something that's unique to them, to their character.
Mm-hmm.
So they don't feel like every time they're about to do something, somebody else can jump in and do the same thing.
Make them feel unique.
Yeah.
Ultimately, it's up to us as game masters to, you know, help carry the hobby on to new players. So be as welcoming as you can be.
Always.
So, getting out of here, this show is funded by the Gnomes 2 Patreon. You too can Patreon backer by following the Patreon link on the Gnomes 2 website to the Gnomes 2 Patreon. We love doing this, so our patrons help us keep it going. The Gnomecast is part of the Polygamers Podcast Network, so if you're enjoying us, here's another show to check out.
Pandas Talking Games. Queer gamers talking about tabletop role-playing games and making outtakes. Showing Pandas, Phil, and Senda every other Wednesday, answering listener questions about playing, running, and designing TTRPGs. It's like Car Talk, but for your games.
You can find all of us at GnomeStew.com, along with GnomeStew on Facebook, Blue Sky, Instagram, and Threads. Gnomes, is there anything else you want to give a shout out to today?
For me, I have talked a bit about this in the past, but soon we will be launching Magnolia, the City of Marvels, a system agnostic setting that is the perfect blend between cyberpunk and medieval fantasy. Now, with a team of mostly POC creators, we are trying to create the perfect setting for you to play in a medieval fantasy setting that has things from the future as well, and you can play with in your favorite TTRPG of choice, with multiple factions and nobles trying to dominate what art is, and a group of gang members trying to liberate the city from this sort of established way to make art. Create the liberty.
Very cool. Well, do you have anything you want to give a shout out to?
Yeah, I would like to give a shout out to, did some work with Cubicle 7 on Victoriana. We just had a Kickstarter that's a fantasy game that uses, the current version uses the 5e system, and it's also compatible with the newest version of D&D. I'm not sure what we're calling it. D&D 2024? I'm not sure. 5.5, 5.1, whatever. But the Kickstarter, even though the Kickstarter has ended, we still have late pledges open. So if you enjoy having a little bit of, you know, Victorian steampunk and magic in your campaigns, you know, give it a look.
And even though Tomas mentioned it earlier, I'm going to have a link to the video he was talking about, which is Deborah Ann Wall explaining to John Bernthal what D&D and role-playing games are. It is absolutely brilliant how she just immediately pulls him in, and he is almost immediately entranced and really wanting to see what happens next. Mm-hmm. It's a clip specifically from Barenthal's podcast called The Real Ones, and the clip is from YouTube, so there'll be a link in the show notes. So, do you guys think this episode was good enough to keep you out of the stew and keep introducing new players to the game?
We certainly hope so, or else we have new ingredients.